Hello, listeners. I'm Logan McLean, and this is OJT, On the Job Training. It's a podcast where I, a journalism student, practice my craft by interviewing passionate people about their projects. Parker Murray is an 18-year-old singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist based in Summerside, PEI. He's been playing music most of his life and is currently working on his debut album, Seizure, set to be released under the artist name Zebedee. He joined me to talk about growing up playing music, his unusual favorite instrument, and art as a mode of self-expression and reinvention. All right, well, Parker Murray.
Yes.
You are a musician in PEI.
That is true.
Yeah. We're going to get into a little bit of your ongoing projects, but I want to talk first about just how did you get into music? Where did this all start?
Oh, geez, bro. I guess it really started very young in the church, perhaps. I didn't necessarily grow up in the church, but I remember young attending Sunday school, and the church environment was really, really full with music and different type of worship, and that did really maybe unconsciously get me interested in it, whether I was aware of it or not. When I was younger, I really, really wanted a guitar or a drum set. I wasn't really set on a certain instrument. Rather, I just wanted to play music. And when I was about 7 or 8, my parents got me a drum set, and there on out, I was hooked. It was brilliant. It was a very, very ratty old kit, used maybe $50, but it got me through as far as I wanted. Mm-hmm. And then later on, probably a few years later, I borrowed a bass from my uncle. And that is really where my career as a musician kick-started, I would say. Yes.
Just a chair is pretty creaky.
I definitely noticed that, yeah.
Might even... Let's... Want to just switch chairs? You can use this one.
Brilliant. Oh, yeah. This is lovely. Once more, this is Parker Murray.
And we're back on OJT.
Brilliant. So, really, my career started with the bass. I was preparing myself to play the bass more and more through junior high school. I had an incredible mentor, Peter Gallant, and I was involved with all the bands there, playing drums and playing bass and doing a little singing as well. Peter Gallant left right before my grade 9 year, and that's when we had a new music teacher come in, Carrie McClellan. Before this, all I knew about her was that she was a bass player. And at this age, looking to make a good impression for this new teacher, I was saying, hey, I need to really work on my bass chops to, say, be on good terms with this new teacher. So the route I took to organize this or to teach myself more was, I wouldn't say unorthodox, but something most are unfamiliar with, I should say. And so I worked on more playing chords and the more theory of the bass up really high on the neck, which in some parts of the internet, it's told, hey, that's wrong. Don't be doing that. But still on, I was saying, hey, I'm going to be sticking with the bass. So let's see what I can do to further advance my bass playing.
Now, you said you started kind of teaching this to yourself. Where did you find these things?
Really, I got, It would really started off with learning basic scales in band class, because throughout band, I'm actually a percussionist. But when I talk about playing bass, I'm more referring to show bands and other rock band, sort of smaller bands that the school also hosts.
Now, these were things that Peter Gallant did at SIS, right?
It was stuff that he started, yes.
Can you explain a little bit what show band and rock band were?
Show band and rock band are very similar to each other. Well, I guess they can be referred to as the same thing, yes. Where it would be a basic band setup with bass, keyboards, drums and guitar and vocalists. This is something to give really the students a sort of head start on this more rock band type scene, or I wouldn't say traditional band, but sort of a rock band type scene. Yes.
And these are grades like 7 to 9, right?
Grade 7 to 9, correct. And so I was preparing my bass playing for this environment. And the foundation of my bass playing at this time came from what I knew as a percussionist, which were the basic scales on a marimba, basically. Our arpeggio, for the musicians who understand, would be our root, the third, the fifth, and our higher octave. And I took all this and to build my own chords throughout the bass. And so I knew a basic chord on the piano, a triad, had a root, the third, and the fifth. And so I did my best to recreate this on the bass. And so I went on to the piano and I said, oh, okay, this is how I create a seventh chord on the piano. How can I transition what's on the piano on to my bass? And I took this for a guitar chord. So the power chord is the root, the fifth, and the higher octave. I moved that onto the bass, which is something that I was told is, well, unorthodox or something non-traditional. And this is something that I had to teach myself because I couldn't find this information on the internet.
Did you find a certain appeal in that, being told, no, you're not supposed to play bass this way?
Almost. At some points, I wouldn't say it's discouraging, but it kind of gave you that underdog encouragement. It's like, I'll prove them wrong.
Yeah.
You say I can't do this, well, I'm going to do the best I can and show you that I can. Definitely. And so this playing these chords on the bass showed me that, yes, now with playing chords, I can now play songs solo on bass. And that is kickstarted me wild. That's when I started writing my own songs, playing chords on the bass, and learning others' songs while playing chords on the bass and singing along to this.
About how old were you when you started writing?
Probably grade eight or so when I probably, but grade eight when I really started getting to the theory of building my own chords, which I guess I can say I'm proud of at that time of my life. And that's about the time I started writing my own songs as well.
And you're 18 now.
I am 18 now. Yeah. Yes.
What sort of influences did you have when you started writing?
That's a very good question. And I don't think I had an extreme amount of influences. I was only semi-interested in learning other people's songs almost. I was very into the, not intentionally with this mindset, but it's something that I've reflected on and I've learned, is that I'm not so interested in learning somebody else's songs when I can create my own sort of thing. And so that's really what I went off to. I didn't really take somebody's influence or say, what is this person doing? Let me copy it, sort of thing. And as I look back, I think maybe I should have taken some other people's advice and taking some knowledge of what they, what I could have learned from them. But I think for the most part, I'm proud to have taken my own approach on it.
What grabbed you about the four-string bass and the way that you play it? Once you started getting on to building those chords, and you play several instruments, you mentioned piano and you play percussion. I know you play a bit of guitar and stuff. What is it about that bass that stands with you?
I'm really encouraged. I find a lot of motivation playing with effect pedals, guitar effect pedals. And one that I think we can all agree on, which is the most fascinating, is the looper pedal. And
just explain what that is a little.
Okay. Oh, gee willikers, how could I explain a loop pedal?
I was hoping you'd say the wah-wah so I could get you to just demonstrate it.
So a looper pedal is a guitar effect pedal that first records, for example, a progression you're playing on your instrument, and then will repeat it for you without you playing. And with this, it allows you to add another layer over top of it. So sort of playing to your own recording. And this can be done with other recording softwares and tech, so on, but its most simplest form is in this guitar effect that you can have right in front of you live.
With that, you can play solo and almost create a band to accompany you on stage, right?
Precisely. And so one of the greatest things I found with the bass is that you can use it in the traditional way of playing the lower octave of songs and playing gnarly bass lines through it, which is great. And also building my own chords to accompany to accompany the bass. Yes.
So you build a foundation and then a house on top.
Or in other ways too. There's not necessarily an order I came through, but that it definitely gave me more options for creating it all, I guess. And I think one of the reasons, not necessarily I was drawn to the bass, but it's what I had access to. I was very interested in creating my own songs and writing my own songs. And so I kind of said, what am I familiar with? I didn't have a guitar handy and I wasn't confident with piano. And so I said, hey, I'm familiar enough with the bass. I'm going to adapt around it and it will work with me to create something new.
Mm-hmm. I've seen you play quite a bit of acoustic bass too. Do you have a preference there, or do you kind of go back and forth?
So I guess that takes us into another category, a different step into my sort of journey or career so far. Originally, I started all of this on a traditional, like, lower octave four-string bass that you would be used to seeing in a show band or rock band type setting. But then when I was meeting the capacity of my bass and needing more ground to work these chords on, I switched to a piccolo bass, which is the exact same body of an actual bass. It's just the type of strings that you put on it. Piccolo bass strings are very, very similar to guitar strings, as they are in the same register, if you will. Mm-hmm. Yet there is still only four of them compared to guitar, and they are still in the same tuning as a bass, E, A, D, G. Mm-hmm. And so with this, instead of using my chords that I've built past the 12th fret on a more traditional bass, I can move it up towards, what would you call this top part of the bass?
Like the lower end?
The lower end.
Oh, the open area?
The open area.
Like on a guitar, those would be open chords. Up towards the nut?
Yes, okay. So compared to a traditional bass, the low octave bass that you'd see in a more show band, rock band setting, where I'd be playing my chords up past the 24th fret, or to the 24th fret, sorry, past the 12th fret, I could now play these before the 12th fret, closer to the headstock. And here it's much more comfortable to play.
Yeah.
Much more comfortable to play.
It's a lot easier physically.
Precisely, yeah. And as well, it looks much more comfortable as well. Uh-huh. Because if you can imagine, my hands caught up on almost right next to the bass body and having the rest of the neck.
Almost next to each other.
Yeah, rest of the neck sticking out. It was quite awkward looking and so on. And
it looked like you're soloing the whole time.
Precisely, yeah.
This guy's a show-off.
Yeah. And as well, this also gave me a third octave up, because if I take the piccolo bass and then pop that up past the 12th fret, I get a whole new octave, which I can use for my gnarly solos and so on.
So the piccolo doesn't go as low as the typical bass, though, right?
It does not, though.
Yeah.
But the typical bass doesn't go as high as the piccolo.
Yeah.
So it's a
little... You bring both to the gig.
Yeah. So it really swaps in and out what you're looking for, really, what you're planning to do.
Yeah.
And I can compensate for both, again, with different pedals and different effects. I can simulate both. With like an octave pedal, it can help me out for sure.
Yeah.
Brings me to the question you asked with which the electric and acoustic bass.
Right.
So I do have an electric and an acoustic traditional sized bass in the lower octave. I enjoy the acoustic a lot, but I do not use it very much anymore. And so I would say it has an almost sentimental feeling to me. This is, as I said, what I started my career in. And so this is where most of my songs were written in, mm-hmm. which is very neat to me now, because I rarely play my traditional sized acoustic bass. Because we said it is limiting towards my chords and it is a less comfortable playing experience. And so when I go back to it and I play some of my songs, I think, wow, how did I really do this? This is quite interesting how I really created so much on this bass and so on. Mm-hmm. And on the upcoming album I have, there is a few songs still played on the traditional sized acoustic bass.
Like recorded on that?
Yes.
Cool.
Very well.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to that in a minute.
Brilliant. And then so I also have an electric and acoustic for the piccolo sized bass. And here there's not an extreme difference between the two other than being electric and acoustic, and you can see this with any guitar as well. It's acoustic or electric. It really just depends on the song. Their playability is quite the same.
So you said that some of your first performances would have been in the church and then at SIS. When did you start playing around PEI, doing a bit of like gigging?
So it was my grade 9 year, as I said, is when I started adapting the bass to play. I started adapting myself to the bass and the bass to me to play chords and write my own songs on that. And there was a concert at my junior high school, SIS, and there was an opportunity for solo artists to play songs and so on. I took this opportunity to play a solo song on my traditional size acoustic bass, and I played Don't Think Twice, It's All Right by Bob Dylan, I believe.
We'll double check.
Yes, fact checked, I think, by Bob Dylan. And I was fairly happy with it. This was my very, very first performance. And I know a grade 9 year for a solo performance isn't the most incredibly impressive thing to do.
Mine's grade 10.
Oh, well, brilliant. Okay.
Talent show.
Then great. Yes, yeah. I've been performing for many, many times before that, but not acoustically, not solo artist with me
on
singing
stage,
myself.
Yeah. That's a whole other beast, isn't it?
Myself. I've been accompanying bands, playing bass for them, playing drums for them, so on. But just me and the bass was new to me. And I was confident with my performance. I think it went very well. And directly that same night, a gentleman named Ken Meister came to me and said, "Hey, I love your music. Would you like to perform at my ice cream shop?" And so after one gig, I started performing bi-weekly in Summerside at an ice cream parlor.
Was that at Sunny's?
It was at the Holman's ice cream parlor.
Yeah.
Which I was ecstatic about. I seen gigging far down the line, sort of, and having my first show immediately afterwards be approached to start performing bi-weekly at a spot. I was quite impressed with myself and very happy with that experience. And after this, throughout that summer and years to come, is when I was approached and started building a relationship with other restaurants and so on to continue gigging and expanding my experiences.
When you started getting into that, I'm sure there were a few missteps here and there. Did you have any Spinal Tap type moments that stand out? Any major disasters?
Well, this was, so coming up, my first paid performance I'd have is really only my second ever gig.
Were you getting paid at Holman's?
I was, yes. And here, I wasn't necessarily prepared for this and not do, well, yeah, it might, I often don't think there is a good excuse to be unprepared for something, yet in this case, I was not prepared. I didn't have time to create a set list for a few hours, and I didn't have the gear to perform. I needed like microphone, stand, cables, speakers, and so on, which is something I didn't have available to me. A solution I came up with was to turn to my family, and my uncle has, say, 100-pound, extremely huge PV amplifier that I borrowed from him. And this is how I originally started gigging for the first, I don't know, first year of my career. I traveled around with this 3 feet by 2 feet amp and a small mixer and the microphone and cables that I need. And so this lack of gear and the hiccups along the way of trying to move it all as a young man, as well as trying to come up with a set list that I was, I wouldn't say necessarily prepared with, were definitely a few hiccups along the way. But when I look back now, I think, wow, was that not a great experience, right? A little young man against the world.
As big as you.
Yeah.
I should note, listeners, Parker and I are cousins. And the uncle he's mentioned is our mutual Uncle Doug. And I think I had that amp for a while, too. And I also had the bass that you borrowed from him.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yes, and that big mixer, the recording mixer.
No, I didn't get the I didn't have Douglas's mixer.
Okay.
I got a cheap, I don't know, $15 one off the Facebook Marketplace. Yeah.
Yeah.
I still use it now. Like, it's great.
That's sweet. I have an old mixer, like a small one I used to. It still lasts. They don't need to be overly elaborate as long as it goes in and out and the knobs work.
Yeah. My input needs hasn't changed since then. Yeah. It's me and an instrument, and that's all I need. Yeah.
I like having mixer set up in my bedroom with all of just the stuff that I like, record player, computer, different things plugged into it. So I can just sit there, surround sound, all that. Makes me feel like a cool professional recorder. Yeah. And yet, like, here with my microphones.
Look at me, mom. Like,
yeah. Look at me now. So you said you recorded an album.
Yes, this is something I'm working on with a gentleman from Muskush named Brent Chasson at a studio in Muskush. He's a very, very helpful man, really knows his stuff. Mm-hmm.
So what's this album called? Tell us more about it.
This album is going to be called Seizure. I told another gentleman this, and he said, oh, wow, that's not funny. That is something that is, people suffer with this. You shouldn't say that. And then I later on had to explain that I'm epileptic, so I guess it gives me the seizure card, the S card to say so. And so I think that maybe the name Seizure will bring an extra layer of jazz or surprise to the album, which I'm really looking forward to. It's recorded all by myself, all on acoustic bass. There'll be also other instruments accompanying it. They're all full tracks, vocals, drums, piano, so on. We even have some strings in some songs.
Musicians for those, or
no, those will all be myself.
All you. Awesome. Yes, man.
Precisely. Mm-hmm.
How long did that take to record?
There's definitely been some delays in the project. Mm-hmm. COVID-19 has set us back some.
That's a good one.
As well as some financial stuff in the works and just availability between myself and producers and engineers.
But it's working, or it's getting there.
It's definitely getting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How many songs are you still?
It will be 12 or 13 song, 12 or 13 track album.
So what artist name is this going under? I've seen ZBD, Don Parker. Tell me about some of your artist names and what those are.
Okay. Well, the first artist name I came under was Don Parker. And that was a first project sort of thing. The name of the song released under Don Parker is a song called Friend, an original of mine. Such a beautiful song. I'm very proud of it. I'm not necessarily proud of how it was recorded. Later down the line, this is something I would like to re-record. I expressed this concern to a friend of mine and a mentor of mine, I should say, and he explained to me that this is just a time. It is a step. As your first single, you can't always expect it to be perfect. And down the road, you'll say, remember this time, this is where I was, and this is how far I came. It is a start sort of thing. It is something good, something new, but it's just a step in the progress we're making. Mm-hmm.
Do you find yourself to be a perfectionist?
I definitely have a vision of what I want, and I know what I'm capable of. And I definitely want the microphones and the recording to capture what I'm capable of, fully capable of. And if it doesn't capture what I'm fully capable of, it's a little disappointing because I want to put out my best work. Mm-hmm. And if I can't do that, I wouldn't be necessarily proud of what I'm putting my effort into, what I'm putting my finances into. And I wanted to show off what I am capable of.
Mm-hmm. So what's the name ZBD?
The name Zebedee.
It's Zebedee.
Zebedee. It's a biblical term, really. It is seen through some of the Old Testament, but mainly in the Gospels of Matthew and Mark. He is the father of the disciples John and James. And I've been getting in more and more to Christianity and biblical writing and so on. And this name really stuck out to me. And I said, yes, this is what I'm looking for. I wasn't necessarily attached to Don Parker and the work I've done under that name and the music there. And I said, before I get too far under this name, I need to make sure I am who I want to be, sort of. this whole coming under a new name, coming out with my music was something I really wanted to not necessarily be a new identity, but sort of really showing off who I actually am. I think I'll have a lot of association with the name Parker Murray, who I am, and what others associate me with. And so I kind of wanted to really show off a new me, sort of something I'm more comfortable with.
So is it a more of a symbolic personal thing or a branding thing or a little bit of both?
That's a good question. I don't think the name really represents a personal thing, yet having a new name could represent a personal thing. Mm-hmm. I've kind of wanting to not have to hesitate about what I do, but being confident in the decisions I make. I like to wear earrings and paint my nails and wear makeup. And I think this is something that couldn't have been associated with the past Parker Murray. I wanted to be open to a new identity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think a new name, and now being out of school, I'll be able to really expand who I'm comfortable being with.
Mm-hmm. Having graduated a few years ago, yeah, I think you'll be able to. It's a good spot to be.
I'm not gay, remember that. I'm not like coming out, but I mean like I'm ready to be who I want to.
Yeah, and you really can't be yourself in high school. Especially with things like the way you want to dress. Mm-hmm. Like, even if people like the way you dress, they'll still make fun of you for it.
Yeah, right? And so that's really what I want to portray with this new name, is sort of a fresh start to who I am. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited to.
And that's about all we have room for this episode. The second part of my interview with Parker Murray will be released later this year. There's just time left for this week's progress report, a segment where I share with listeners some of what I've been learning. Here at the almost quarterly point, I'd like to reflect a bit on how OJT has been received. First off, the whole thing has been deeply rewarding. I couldn't even begin to count the hours that have gone into the different roles of host, producer, promoter, wrangler of guests, etc. But I feel no reason to. Like many of you listeners, I've grown up in a culture that believes time is money, something spent rather than experienced. More than that, I'm something of a workaholic. Or at least I keep myself a bit too busy sometimes without knowing exactly why. For me, working on this podcast has given new meaning to the term labor of love. The project is its own profit. While the dream is to someday turn podcasting into a career, or do radio or whatever, I'm fine with this show never making a cent. It may even be better if it remains a hobby, but that's a discussion far down the line. Second, I think it's important I've found so much gratification in the process, because audience numbers have been a bit flat. Now, there has been lots of positive feedback, and it's been useful. I'm especially glad to know people dig this segment, but it's been a slow start. I expected this. Podcasts everywhere are suffering because of the pandemic. Hell, even NPR announced this week that their listenership had dropped 25% because people aren't commuting. But my final point, I'm hoping this will improve a bit in the fall when I return to Charlottetown and Holland College. While I've been doing the social media hustle from home in Summerside, I'm better at promoting in person. I much prefer the handshake, business card, elevator pitch routine to the type copy-paste of social media. The handshake part may be a relic now, but at least I'll be back on campus in a few weeks and back to PEI's cultural hub. Charlottetown's arts and culture scene is limited by size, but it's also accessible for that reason. Word of mouth remains the best form of marketing, and it's no secret that folks in PEI can't keep a secret. That's all for now. You can follow Parker Murray on Instagram at _Zebedee, and his Facebook page is just Zebedee. That's Zebedee. Also, check out his singles on Spotify, Friend, under the artist name Don Parker, and Puddles under Zebedee. You can follow this podcast on Instagram at OJT_podcast and on Twitter at OJTpodcast. The Facebook page is OJT On The Job Training. You can follow me on Instagram at logan.mclean.75 and on Twitter at loganmclean94. And finally, listeners, please check out my website, ojtpod.ca, for more pictures and content from Zebedee, along with my written stories and photography, and pages on other past guests and episodes. The podcast is available there and on all major streaming platforms. Please rate and subscribe and leave a review. Everything helps when getting a podcast off the ground, and if you like this show and want more interesting guests, listener feedback is the best way to help me reach new people and make that happen. This has been OJT On The Job Training. I'm Logan McLean. Thank you for listening.